Okay.
All right. So let's get started. Hi, everyone. This is Kimoy, the Kirby Coach of thekirbycoach.com. And tonight's guest is Laurie Sanders of blackvelvetseductions.com. He's the author and publisher of Black Velvet Seductions Publishing. They publish romance, erotic romance, romantic suspense novels. So this should be quite interesting. So tell me, Laurie, how did you get started?
Well, I was finishing my own novel up, and as I was finishing it, I kind of looked around at other publishers that were out there at that time, which was back about 5 years ago, so a different crop then than now. And I didn't really see anybody that was quite everything I wanted. I mean, there were some good choices, but everybody that was out there seemed to have some good things and some flaws. And so I decided to take the knowledge that I had and use it to start Black Velvet Seductions.
Okay. Now, most entrepreneurs usually start out by seeing a gap or not seeing something that they're particularly looking for. Now, I know that there are tons of romance novels, erotic novels, and so forth. So what were you looking for specifically?
Well, from an author standpoint, I was looking for somebody who published romance that had an erotic content, but also had a lot of plot and a lot of character backstory, so that the characters were well-formed and not just cardboard folk that, you know, moved around the story stage and didn't really, you know, have a foundation to what they were doing or why they were doing it. So, you know, so I was looking for a publisher who published that kind of thing, first of all. And then I was looking as an author for someone who had a lot of distribution channels, because the more you get a book out, the more you get to sell it, and we're all after the sales. So,
right.
Well, it was kind of two-pronged.
Okay. So then how does being a plus-size woman play into your business, or how does your plus-size characters play into your business? I want to talk about that.
Well, we have a specific area of our website that has the books that feature plus-size heroines. We also have a plus-size hero in one of our books, and so it's not something that we publish exclusively, but it is something that they know that we do publish. One of the things that I've seen in quite a few of the books that are published that feature plus-sized women as heroines is kind of this attitude that she has to lose weight, have a makeover, and then the hero will notice her, you know,
right.
So that she has to kind of deserve his attention. And that has always grated on me. You know, I sort of think that, you know, he ought to notice her for her and not so much for what her shape is. And so in our books, I specifically have guidelines that I don't want that kind of thing where, you know, where the heroine has to, you know, has to lose weight, has to have a makeover, has to, you know, I want heroes who like the heroine just the shape that she is, you know, who like her curves, who like her size. And so that's,
okay,
you know, that's something that sets apart the books in our line versus some of the others that are out there.
Okay. Now, that's pretty interesting. So I'm curious to know what has been the customer response to that type of book. I mean, did you receive a lot of negative comments, or was, you know, has it still in limber, or?
No, actually quite the reverse. I get quite a few letters from readers who say things like, you know, thank you for making the heroine a curvy woman. I'm a curvy woman, and I like that. you know, things like that. I haven't had any negative comments at all about the size of any of our heroines.
Oh, okay. Now that's pretty interesting. So would you say that there's a huge market available for books that feature plus-size women that are heroines and the main characters and so forth?
I think so. I think that there is a big market for that. I think that a lot of women readers are not skinny little things, and they enjoy seeing a heroine who is shaped more like them, in the same way that you know, someone who is of a different race than the traditional white romance likes to see people of color in romance. So I think that they like seeing in a book a heroine who is more like them, who has some of their same maybe insecurities about their body or their shape or you know, things like that. So I think it's something that reaches out and is a common commonality between the heroine and the reader. And so the reader is able to identify with the heroine, you know, on that level as kind of an additional level, you know,
right,
beyond just what's going on in the story.
Okay. Now, for someone who's starting out and maybe they enjoy writing and would think about having a publishing company as you did, what were some of the mistakes that you made along the way that they could possibly avoid?
Well, first of all, you know, it isn't something that you get into without having a background. I had written for a number of years. I had been in a critique group for a number of years. And so those skills that came from, you know, from those experiences were carried into the publishing business. My husband is a business analyst, so and has worked his career for Fortune 500 companies. So I got some skills from him that got to be pulled into the company too. And so, you know, the first thing is to kind of take stock of where you are and what knowledge you have and what knowledge you don't have. And, you know, find people who have the knowledge that you don't have so that you can pull them in. I don't know. I don't think that we really made a whole lot of mistakes. We thought that we would get started a lot quicker with our first books, and it takes a lot longer to edit to the degree that we do than I initially thought it would. So I was, you know, looking for a lot sooner startup first release than we had. But, you know, those are kinds of things that you either publish to fill spots, in which case you do publish some things that are not ready to go, or you wait and you publish them when they are ready to go, and that's always been in what we've done. And so I don't really think that we really made many mistakes along the way.
Okay.
There were things that I didn't know that I learned, you know, how to write a rejection letter. I had never received one in my writing career, and so I didn't have any clue what they looked like or how to do that. And so that was something that I learned, how to write a revision letter. And I did those just the way that I do them, and I don't know that they're the same as anybody else in the industry. I gather from responses I get that they are not, that they're more in-depth, and you know, that the authors that we work with appreciate that. So that's a positive.
So then you went the traditional route of publishing a book, where, you know, like a printed book, because in today's world, a lot of people are producing electronic books or e-books, as they're known.
Right. We publish both. We publish in paper. We publish what's called print on demand, which means that it's printed as there's an order for it, as opposed to printing 5,000 copies and hoping that you sell them.
Definitely a different business model to use, so that you're not going into this business with a lot of debt. Right?
Exactly.
Okay.
And we've also jumped on the Kindle bandwagon, which has been really good for us. Kindles are selling you know, right and left through Amazon. They can't keep them in stock, and as more are sold, there are more readers out there. Those readers want to have books, and you know, so they're buying them, and we're seeing a lot of growth in that particular area as well.
Okay, now that's awesome. That's really good. An added stream of income to your business.
Yeah, it has been. It's been a real growth area.
So would you say that the traditional books are better than the e-books, or is about the same?
I think that there are good and bad in both sectors. Traditional publishers tend to have a certain number of spots that they need to fill, and they fill those spots with, you know, the best stuff that they can get and the best that they can edit it in the time they have. But that sometimes leaves something to be desired, and the same is true with a lot of ebook publishers. So I think that some time back there was kind of a stress point between paper publishing and e-publishing, and those that were paper published were saying, "Oh, paper authors are better and the books are better and all of that," but nowadays, I think that it's paper books are losing market share and ebooks are gaining market share.
Right.
So there is some shift and there is some overlap. I mean, I get manuscripts from people who are paper published fairly frequently. So, it isn't, you can be reading the same author in paper from New York publisher as you can from an ebook publisher. So it's, I think that the quality is getting a lot closer together, and that there are good and bad in both sectors, really.
Okay. Now, I know that for people who may be dreaming of being an author full-time, there's always that fear of, okay, how am I going to pay the bills while I write and write and write?
Yeah.
So what were some different things, or how is your business model set up so that there's not that fast or famine phase that happens for someone who
I think any time you start a business, you have a period of where you don't make an income. I mean, that's true of if you are selling real estate or starting a restaurant business or any business that you start up. It takes a period of time to get the business going, and you don't make a profit during those times. So I think that you have to set your business up somehow so that you're not counting on that income. Either you keep another job, or your husband works and supports what you do enough that you don't have to work, or something like that, so that you're not in that feast or famine mode all the time, because it does take a period of time to build the contacts, to build the distributors. You know, I mean, most of what we sell is sold through other sites who sell our books, and it takes a period of time to get all of those things in place, and each one of those then
affiliating.
So, there takes a period of time, and I would not advise anybody to, you know, quit their day job and plan on, you know, making a living right away writing. It takes a while to build a readership and, that sort of thing. And it's a lot of marketing.
Speaking of marketing, I wanted to know, what were some marketing strategies that you used to get your name and your brand and your books out there?
One of the things that we've done that has been really successful is we have a free books on Friday drawing where we give away three free ebooks every Friday in a drawing from our website, and it's to people who are signed up for our free readers newsletter. So they sign up for the newsletter, and then we send them information about what books, and often a PDF download of a sample of a book, a three chapter excerpt. And then from that pool of people, we draw three names each week, and those get usually a free ebook, or sometimes a free paperback, or once in a while a free book for themselves and one for a friend or something like that. So that has been something that we have promoted, the contest rather than our books per se, because different people like different books. And so if I, you know, if I promote a specific book, I'm hitting specific people who like that specific
right.
book. If I
right.
if I am promoting free books, a lot bigger pool of people like free books. So
okay, that's very interesting.
So that worked well for us.
Okay.
That's something that we've done.
Okay. Now, what would you say? How, like, what were some great successes that you've experienced over the years? Like,
oh.
something that was really monumental.
Very monumental. Let's see. Well, the first one kind of was naturally our first, when our first book, Fool Me Once, was released. That was, you know, really our first monumental big step, seeing it come out first in ebook and be released at Fictionalize. Was a big thing. And then when we got the paper shipment, which came a few days later, you know, actually seeing it in paper and holding it in paper and smelling the paper, you know, all of that was a big thing. We had our first Fictionwise big bestseller with Contract Bride by Anne Amorelli. That was another, you know, another big thing. We really hadn't thought about hitting any bestseller lists or anything, and it just sort of got up there and stayed up there for quite a while, and so that was a big thing for us, and we were pleased by that. We've had a couple of other books, my book, which was actually to launch the whole company but was not finished. I got into editing everybody else's and didn't get my own finished until 3 years after the company was launched. But
oh, wow.
But when it was released, it went to number one on Fictionwise. And so that was a big, well, Fictionwise and all romance e-books and, you know, several places that it was a number one, you know, number one or in the top 10, and it's in the top 55 at Amazon. So that's been a big, big thing. Seeing the reviews that people write is, certainly for any author or publisher, you know, you really put your heart and your soul into what you write. It's the characters mm-hmm. are real to you. They're like friends that you know. And, you know, even after you finish the book, they're still like friends that you know. And to see good reviews is certainly monumental for anybody who writes or edits or publishes. I think. I mean, you just, it's your little reward for all of the times that were difficult, you know, and
right.
most books have those difficult points.
Okay.
So I guess that would be the biggies. Night Angel, which is our latest release, was also a bestseller at Fictionwise, so, and it has received wonderful reviews, so we're really really pleased with it.
Well, that's pretty good. I mean, it's always good to reflect and look back on the, you know, good things that have happened in your company and big celebrations and so forth. So I believe in celebrating even the tiny little things.
Yeah, I think you have to. Otherwise, you get beat to death by the level of work. I mean, you know, if you're working the number of hours that it takes to run a publishing company, it will beat you to death if you don't have some celebration times, you know, if you're not
exactly
having some positives out of it too.
Okay, so how do you select the authors that will be published?
I receive submissions, like any publisher. We're listed in Writer's Market, and authors who have manuscripts to sell look in Writer's Market for publishers who publish that type of material, and then they choose a publisher, And, you know, when I get them, they've chosen us. And so I read through the material that I get and choose from that the pieces that I think are most likely to resonate with the readership that we have. Every publisher has kind of a specific readership, and some of it overlaps, of course, but there are specific things that a readership looks to a publisher for, and
mm-hmm.
so we're trying to publish to that idea that the readership has of us, and so I'm always looking for things that appeal to that specific readership that we have.
Okay.
For us, it seems to be kind of traditional romance plots with kind of a hint of steam, or more than a hint in some cases. And so that seems to be the niche thing that we have is that and something called deep point of view, which is a writer's technique that makes the writing so that the reader feels as if they're experiencing the story along with the character. Mm-hmm. And then we edit everything to that, to that end. That is what we want at the end of the editing process. We want the reader to be able to read the book and feel like they're experiencing that story.
Okay.
Through the character. So
would you say that is a brand of Black Velvet Seductions, is being able to make the reader feel like they're
It is what sets us apart consistently.
Okay.
A lot of, most publishers do that some. Most publishers would like to do it all the time because those are usually the books that get the best reviews and so on. But not all do it all the time, and I don't know whether it's they lack time to edit to that degree. It's a really time-consuming kind of edit, too. So I don't know why they don't do it, but we do, and it's what sets us apart across all of our lines, from sweet to super hot. All of the books that we do have that element about them.
So do you plan to focus more on plus-size heroines, or do you think that that will grow as your business continues to grow? Like, how do you see that in the future?
It's what I write, as far as what I write, I will continue to write that. What other people write, I'm kind of like the gatekeeper. Everything
okay.
comes to me, and out of what comes to me, I choose the best of what's there. And so if authors are not sending me plus-sized heroines, I can't publish them. But I do,
right.
I do ask for that. It's frequently in my wish lists that I give to writers and so on. So it is something that we would certainly like to see more of. But again, I'm at the mercy of the writers,
Right.
I have to choose from what they send me.
Okay. So then, where do you see Black Velvet Seduction going in the next few years? In the next 5 years?
I expect we'll continue to sell like we are. Probably, I expect to see ebooks taking over market share even more than they are, principally in the Kindle book area. So we'll continue to produce books in that format and sell in that format. I see us continuing to be very select in what we publish. We don't publish a huge number of books each year because of the time involved in editing them to that standard that I mentioned, where you're feeling like you're, experiencing the story through the character.
Mm-hmm.
That's very time-consuming, so I can edit maybe four or five of those in a year. So that kind of limits how many books we can publish. So what we try to do is pick those that we think are the best of the lot that we get, and then promote them. I mean, we promote our backlist as much as we promote new releases. So we have a little bit different outlook in that. Most publishers publish and they promote the new releases while the backlist kind of goes nowhere. So I see us continuing to do the same things that, that we are currently doing, and doing them on a wider scale as we publish more books.
Okay. Now, I kind of have an idea of what I think this might be, but I'll ask the question anyway. If you could wave a magic wand and fix one nagging challenge in your business, what would that be?
If I could fix one challenge?
Yeah, one problem, one issue.
One problem.
Wave a magic wand.
It would be really nice to clone me.
To what?
To clone me would be really nice. The biggest challenge I have is just time. It's managing to get the editing part done, the promotion part done, the email done. You know, getting everything done is my biggest challenge. And so having more time or someone else to help with that would be, you know, immensely helpful. I suppose that would be, that would be the biggest challenge to overcome. Everything else is pretty much built on having more time.
You know, right.
The editing challenge.
I guess that if you could speed up editing, that would be the the thing that you.
Yeah. The editing is certainly the slower part of the process. It takes time, and it's not something that you can or that I can do all day. I don't stay fresh enough to see everything I need to see for longer than about 2 hours. So if I work 2 hours, I need to go do something else, you know, for a while, and then I can come back to it again. So it limits how long I can actually, you know, be doing that work.
Right.
So having another editor with the same, you know, the same skills and the same way of viewing things would solve that problem as well. That may happen someday.
Okay. Well, you know, it's not something that's impossible.
No, it isn't. I'm sort of gradually training people as I go through this, you know. Because all of my writers are learning about deep point of view, and they have all now been through the editing process, so they know something about it now, too.
And, right.
So as we go forward, there'll be somebody that stands out, you know, and, we'll bring them in maybe at some point, you know.
Yeah, and that's one thing I have noticed is that any business that brings in six to seven figures in revenue, it's usually not the entrepreneur doing everything him or herself. They usually have a team of people who is able to replicate their vision, replicate their systems and processes so that the company can grow without much of
right.
them. So definitely being able to expand your team and having systems in place is part of growing as a business. So
I certainly agree with that. We do subcontract out a lot, and I do have people who are in certain role, cover art and so on, that I interface with, but that's their ball, and I don't do that work. I consult on it and share my vision there, but it isn't that I'm not involved in it. Personally doing a cover or something like that. Well, I also hire proofreaders. I am not a grammatician or that wonderful of a speller, so I hire people who that is their strength, and they do that work for me. And I'm more of a story doctor, and that's where I put my focus, because that's where my skill is. And I think it's a matter of knowing what your skills are and putting them, using them in the right spot, and hiring somebody to do something that you're not good at or not qualified at or don't enjoy. You know.
Exactly. You hit it right on the money. That's exactly how entrepreneurs should operate in their business, where you focus your energies on what you like and what you're good at, and everything else should be delegated
or hired out.
And I think that requires a huge mindset shift, especially for those who are starting out, where you just have, you know, everything is really exciting. You're enjoying doing every aspect of your business. But as you grow, you know, the things that you don't like tend to pop up.
And you have to
make that decision.
Right. And as you're starting out, you're poor, too. I mean, to an extent. Your company is not making a profit yet. And you're eager to get to that point. So you're willing to do a little more yourself. If you become profitable, you know, some of the challenges that you face are a matter of spending some money to get some things done that need to be done, you know.
I like to say that it's an investment, not really spending, because I know people, you know, it's that mindset thing again where people think, okay, I have to spend money here and there, but really it is an investment when you delegate things that you do not like doing or you're not that great at.
Those who return,
whether it's in money or energy or stress relief, you will definitely see a return. So,
yes, I agree.
Awesome. Well, you know, this interview didn't go rated X as I thought it would, so that's good.
Well, you didn't ask any X-rated questions.
Well, I wanted to focus more on the business side of things because my audience are entrepreneurs, and, you know, I wanted to give them insight on what it's like to start a business, particularly from someone who is plus size or who has a product or service that caters to the plus size community. So, you know, maybe another interview I'll ask those kinds of questions.
Okay. All righty.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Laurie. I really appreciate it. And
you're very welcome. Are we still being recorded? Or
yes. Let me close and say thanks again for your time. You can check out Black Velvet Seductions at blackvelvetseductions.com. They have a long line of books and ebooks that you can check out for your viewing, whatever kind of pleasure you have going on. And this is Kim Moore, the Curvy Coach, signing off. Now, let's see. Stop the recording.